Chapter 13. Later, when his legs had ceased collapsing under him, he took Anne Hawthorne to the surface and showed her the beginnings of his garden.
"You know," Anne said, "it takes courage to let people down."
"You mean Leo?"
He knew what she meant. There was no dispute about what he had just now done to Leo and to Felix Blau and the whole PP Layouts and Candy organization.
"Leo's a grown man," he pointed out. "He'll get over it. He'll recognize that he has to handle Eldridge himself, and he will."
And, he thought, the litigation against Eldridge would not have accomplished that much. My precog ability tells me that, too.
"Beats,"
Anne said. She had seated herself on the fender of an autonomic tractor and was examining packages of seeds.
"I hate beets, so please don't plant any, even mutant ones that are green, tall, and skinny and taste like last year's plastic doorknob."
"Were you thinking," he said, "of coming here to live?"
"No."
Furtively, she inspected the homeostatic control box of the tractor and picked at the frayed, partially incinerated insulation of one of its power cables.
"But I expect to have dinner with your group every once in a while. You're the closest neighbor we have, such as you are."
"Listen," he said, "that decayed ruin that you inhabit..." He broke off. Identity, he thought, I'm already acquiring it in terms of this substandard communal dwelling that could use 50 years of constant detailed repair work by experts.
"My hovel," he said to her, "can lick your hovel any day of the week." "What about Sunday? Can you do it twice then?"
"Sunday," he said, "we're not allowed to. We read the scriptures."
"Don't joke about it," Anne said quietly.
I wasn't. And he hadn't been. Not at all.
"What you said earlier about Palmer Eldridge?"
Barney said, "I only wanted to tell you one thing, maybe two at the most. First, that he, you know what I refer to, really exists, really is there. Although not like we've thought, and not like we've experienced him up to now. Not like we'll perhaps ever be able to. And second..."
He hesitated. "Say it."
"He can't help us very much," Barney said. "Some, maybe. But he stands with empty, open hands. He understands. He wants to help. He tries, but it's just not that simple. Don't ask me why. Maybe even he doesn't know. Maybe it puzzles him, too. Even after all the time he's had to mull over it." And all the time he'll have later on, Barney thought, if he gets away from Leo Bolero. Human, one of us, Leo. Does Leo know what he's up against? And if he did, would he try anyhow, keep on with his schemes? Leo would. A precog can see something that's foreordained. Anne said,
"What met Eldridge and entered him, what we're confronting, is a being superior to ourselves, and as you say, we can't judge it or make sense out of what it does or wants. It's mysterious and beyond us. But I know you're wrong, Barney. Something which stands with empty, open hands is not God. It's a creature fashioned by something higher than itself, as we were. God wasn't fashioned, and he isn't puzzled."
"I felt," Barney said, "about him a presence of the deity. It was there. Especially in that one moment," he thought, "when Eldridge shoved me, tried to make me try."
"Of course," Anne agreed. "I thought you understood about that. He's here inside each of us, and in a higher form, such as we're talking about, he would certainly be even more manifest. But let me tell you my cat joke. It's very short and simple. A hostess is giving a dinner party, and she's got a lovely 5-pound T-bone steak sitting on the sideboard in the kitchen, waiting to be cooked while she chats with the guests in the living room, has a few drinks and whatnot. But then she excuses herself to go into the kitchen to cook the steak, and it's gone. And there's the family cat, in the corner, sedately washing its face."
"The cat got the steak," Barney said.
"Did it? The guests are called in. They argue about it. The steak is gone, all 5 pounds of it. There sits the cat, looking well-fed and cheerful. 'Weigh the cat,' someone says. They've had a few drinks. It looks like a good idea. So they go into the bathroom and weigh the cat on the scales. It reads exactly 5 pounds. They all perceive this reading, and one guest says, 'Okay, that's it, there's the steak.' They're satisfied that they know what happened now. They've got empirical proof.
Then a qualm comes to one of them, and he says, puzzled, "But where is the cat?"
"I heard that joke before," Barney said. "And anyhow, I don't see its application."
Anne said, "That joke poses the finest distillation of the problem of ontology ever invented. If you ponder it long enough..."
"Hell," he said angrily. "It's 5 pounds of cat. It's nonsense. There's no stake if the scale shows 5 pounds.
"Remember the wine and the wafer," Anne said quietly. He stared at her. The idea for a moment seemed to come through. "Yes," she said. "The cat was not the stake, but the cat might be a manifestation which the stake was taking at that moment. The key word happens to be is. Don't tell us, Barney, that whatever entered Balmer Eldritch is God, because you don't know that much about him. No one can. But that living entity from intersystem space may, like us, be shaped in his image, a way he selected of showing himself to us. If the map is not the territory, the pot is not the potter. So don't talk ontology, Barney. Don't say is."
She smiled at him hopefully to see if he understood. "Someday," Barney said, "we may worship at that monument." Not the deed by Leo Bolero, he thought. As admirable as it was, will be, more accurately, that won't be our object. No, will all of us, as a culture, do as I already am tending toward. We'll invest it wanly, pitifully, with our conception of infinite powers. And we'll be right, in a sense, because those powers are there. But as Anne says, as to its actual nature...
"I can see you want to be alone with your garden," Anne said. "I think I'll start back to my hovel. Good luck. And Barney..."
She reached out, took him by the hand, and held on to him earnestly.
"Never grovel. God, or whatever superior being it is we've encountered, it wouldn't want that, and even if it did, you shouldn't do it."
She leaned forward, kissed him, and then started off. "You think I'm right?" Barney called after her. "Is there any point in trying to start a garden here? Or will we go the familiar way, too?"
"Don't ask me. I'm no authority."
"You just care about your spiritual salvation," he said savagely.
"I don't even care about that anymore," Anne said. "I'm terribly, terribly confused, and everything upsets me here. Listen."
She walked back to him, her eyes dark and shaded, without light.
"When you grabbed me to take that bindle of choosy, you know what I saw? I mean, actually saw, not just believed."
"An artificial hand, and a distortion of my jaw, and my eyes..."
"Yes," she said tightly. "The mechanical slitted eyes. What did it mean?"
Barney said, "It meant that you were seeing into absolute reality, the essence beyond the mere appearance. In your terminology," he thought, "what you saw is called stigmata." For an interval, she regarded him.
"That's the way you really are?"
she said then, and drew away from him, with aversion manifest on her face.
"Why aren't you what you seem? You're not like that now. I don't understand."
She added tremulously,
"I wish I hadn't told that cat joke."
He said, "I saw the same thing in you, dear, at that instant. You fought me off with fingers decidedly not those you were born with. And it could so easily slip into place again. The presence abides with us, potentially, if not actually."
"Is it a curse?" Anne asked. "I mean, we have the account of an original curse of God. Is it like that all over again?"
"You ought to be the one who knows. You remember what you saw. All three stigmata, the dead artificial hand, the Jensen eyes, and the radically deranged jaw. Symbols of its inhabitation," he thought, "in our midst, but not asked for, not intentionally summoned. And we have no mediating sacraments through which to protect ourselves. We can't compel it, by our careful, time-honored, clever, painstaking rituals, to confine itself to specific elements, such as bread and water or bread and wine. It is out in the open, ranging in every direction. It looks into our eyes, and it looks out of our eyes."
"It's a price," Anne decided, "that we must pay
for our desire to undergo that drug experience with that choosy, like the apple originally.
Her tone was shockingly bitter.
Yes, he agreed, but I think I already paid it.
Or came within a hair of paying it, he decided. That thing, which we know only in its Terran body, wanted to substitute me at the instant of its destruction. Instead of God dying for man, as we once had, we faced for a moment a superior, the superior power, asking us to perish for it. Does that make it evil? He wondered. Do I believe the argument I gave Norm Schein? Well, it certainly makes it inferior to what came 2,000 years before. It seems to be nothing more or less than the desire of, as Anne puts it, an out-of-dust created organism to perpetuate itself. We all have it. We all would like to see a goat or a lamb cut to pieces and incinerated instead of ourselves. Oblations have to be made, and we don't care to be them. In fact, our entire lives are dedicated to that one principle, and so is its.
Goodbye, Anne said. I'll leave you alone. You can sit in the cab of that dredge and dig away to your heart's content. Maybe when I next see you, there'll be a completed water system installed here.
She smiled once more at him, briefly, and then hiked off in the direction of her own hovel. After a time, he climbed the steps to the cab of the dredge which he had been using and started the creaky, sand-impregnated mechanism. It howled mournfully in protest. Happier, he decided, to remain asleep. This, for the machine, was the ear-splitting summons of the last trumpet, and the dredge was not yet ready. He had scooped perhaps a half mile of irregular ditch, as yet void of water, when he discovered that an indigenous life form, a Martian something, was stalking him. At once he halted the dredge and peered into the glare of the cold Martian sun to make it out. It looked a little like a lean, famished old grandmother on all fours, and he realized that this was probably the jackal creature which he had been warned repeatedly about. In any case, whatever it was, it obviously hadn't fed in days. It eyed him ravenously while keeping its distance. And then, projected telepathically, its thoughts reached him. So he was right. This was it.
May I eat you?
It asked, and panted avidly, slack-jawed.
Christ, no!
Barney said. He fumbled about in the cab of the dredge for something to use as a weapon. His hands closed over a heavy wrench, and he displayed it to the Martian predator, letting it speak for him. There lay a great message in the wrench and the way he gripped it.
Get down off that contraption,
the Martian predator thought, in a mixture of hope and need.
I can't reach you up there.
The last was intended, certainly, to be a private thought, retained in camera, but somehow it had gotten projected, too. The creature had no finesse.
I'll wait,
it decided.
He has to get down eventually.
Barney swung the dredge around and started it back in the direction of Chickenpox Prospects. Groaning, it clanked at a maddeningly slow rate. It appeared to be failing with each yard. He had the intuition that it was not going to make it. Maybe the creature's right, he said to himself. It is possible I'll have to step down and face it. Spared, he thought bitterly, by the enormously higher life form that entered Palmer Eldridge that showed up in our system from out there, and then eaten by this stunted beast. The termination of a long flight, he thought. A final arrival that even 5 minutes ago, despite my precog talent, I didn't anticipate. Maybe I didn't want to, as Dr. Smile, if he were here, would triumphantly bleat. The dredge wheezed, bucked violently, and then, painfully contracting itself, curled up. Its life flickered a moment, and then it died to a stop. For a time, Barney sat in silence. Placed directly ahead of him, the old grandmother jackal Martian flesh-eater watched, never taking its eyes from him.
All right, Barney said. Here I come.
He hopped from the cab of the dredge, flailing with the wrench. The creature dashed at him. Almost to him, 5 feet away, it suddenly squealed, veered, and ran past, not touching him. He spun and watched it go.
Unclean,
it thought to itself. It halted at a safe distance and fearfully regarded him, tongue lolling.
You're an unclean thing,
it informed him dismally. Unclean, Barney thought. How? Why?
You just are,
the predator answered.
Look at yourself. I can't eat you. I'd be sick.
It remained where it was, drooping with disappointment and,
aversion. He had horrified it. "Maybe we're all unclean to you," he said. "All of us from Earth, alien to this world, unfamiliar."
"Just you,"
it told him flatly.
"Look at your right arm, your hand. There's something intolerably wrong with you. How can you live with yourself? Can't you cleanse yourself some way?"
He did not bother to look at his arm and hand. It was unnecessary. Calmly, with all the dignity that he could manage, he walked on, over the loosely packed sand, toward his hovel. That night, as he prepared to go to bed in the cramped bunk provided by his compartment at Chickenpox Prospects, someone rapped on his closed door. "Hey, Mayerson, open up!" Putting on his robe, he opened the door. "That trading ship is back," Norm Schein, excited, grabbing him by the lapel of his robe, declared. "You know, from the Choosy people. You got any skins left? If so..." "If they want to see me," Barney said, disengaging Norm Schein's grip from his robe, "they'll have to come down here. You tell them that." He shut the door then. Norm loudly departed. He seated himself at the table on which he ate his meals, got a pack, his last, of Terran cigarettes from the drawer and lit up. He sat smoking and meditating, hearing above and around his compartment the scampering noises of his fellow hovelists, large-scale mice, he thought, who have scented the bait. The door to his compartment opened. He did not look up. He continued to stare down at the table's surface, at the ashtray and matches and pack of Camels.
"Mr. Mayerson,"
Barney said, "I know what you're going to say." Entering the compartment, Palmer Eldritch shut the door, seated himself across from Barney, and said,
"Correct, my friend. I let you go just before it happened, before Leo fired the second time. It was my carefully considered decision, and I've had a long time to dwell on the matter, a little over 3 centuries. I won't tell you why."
"I don't care why," Barney said. He continued to stare down.
"Can't you look at me?" Palmer Eldritch said.
"I'm unclean," Barney informed him.
"Who told you that?"
"An animal out in the desert, and it had never seen me before. It knew it just by coming close to me." While still 5 feet away, he thought to himself, which is fairly far.
Maybe its motive.
It had no goddamn motive. In fact, just the opposite. It was half dead from hunger and yearning to eat me. So it must be true.
To the primitive mind, Eldritch said, the unclean and the holy are confused, merged merely as taboo. The ritual for them, the...
Ah, hell, he said bitterly. It's true and you know it. I'm alive. I won't die on that ship, but I'm defiled.
By me?
Barney said, make your own guess. After a pause, Eldritch shrugged and said,
all right. I was cast out from a star system. I won't identify it, because to you it wouldn't matter. And I took up residence where that wild get-rich-quick operator from your system encountered me. And some of that has been passed on to you, but not much. You'll gradually, over the years, recover. It'll diminish until it's gone. Your fellow colonists won't notice, because it's touched them, too. It began as soon as they participated in the chewing of what we sold them.
I'd like to know, Barney said, what you were trying to do when you introduced Choosy to our people.
Perpetuate myself, the creature opposite him said quietly.
He glanced up then. A form of reproduction?
Yes, the only way I can.
With overwhelming aversion, Barney said, my God, we would have all become your children.
Don't fret about that now, Mr. Mayerson, it said, and laughed in a human-like, jovial way. Just tend your little garden up top. Get your water system going. Frankly, I long for death. I'll be glad when Leo Bolero does what he's already contemplating. He's begun to hatch it, now that you've refused to take the brain metabolism toxin. Anyhow, I wish you luck here on Mars. I would have enjoyed it myself. But things didn't work out. And that's that.
Eldritch rose to his feet then. You could revert, Barney said, Resume the form you were in when Palmer encountered you. You don't have to be there, inhabiting that body, when Leo opens fire on your ship.
Could I?
Its tone was mocking.
Maybe something worse is waiting for me if I fail to show up there. But you wouldn't know about that. You're an entity whose lifespan is relatively short, and in a short span there's a lot less...
It paused, thinking. Don't tell me, Barney said. I don't want to know. The next time he looked up, Palmer Eldritch was gone. He lit another cigarette. What a mess, he thought. This is how we act when finally we do contact, at long last, another sentient race within the galaxy. And how it behaves. Badly as us, and in some respects much worse. And there's nothing to redeem the situation. Not now. And Leo thought that by going out to confront Eldritch with that tube of toxin, we had a chance. Ironic. And here I am, without having even consummated the miserable act for the court's benefit, physically, basically unclean. Maybe Anne can do something for me, he thought suddenly. Maybe there are methods to restore one to the original condition, dimly remembered, such as it was, before the late and more acute contamination set in. He tried to remember, but he knew so little about Neo-Christianity. Anyhow, it was worth a try. It suggested there might be hope, and he was going to need that in the years ahead. After all, the creature residing in deep space, which had taken the form of Palmer Eldritch, bore some relationship to God. If it was not God, as he himself had decided, then at least it was a portion of God's creation. So some of the responsibility lay on him, and, it seemed to Barney, he was probably mature enough to recognize this. Getting him to admit it, though, that might be something else again. However, it was still worth talking to Anne Hawthorne. She might know of techniques for accomplishing even that. But he somehow doubted it. Because he held a terrifying insight, simple, easy to think and utter, which perhaps applied to himself and those around him, to this situation. There was such a thing as salvation, but not for everyone. On the trip back to Terra from their unsuccessful mission to Mars, Leo Bolero endlessly nitpicked and conferred with his colleague Felix Blau. It was now obvious to both of them what they would have to do.
He's all the time traveling between a master satellite around Venus and the other planets, plus his domain on Luna, Felix pointed out in summation. And we all recognize how vulnerable a ship in space is. Even a small puncture can...
He gestured graphically.
We'd need the UN's cooperation, Leo said gloomily, because all he and his organization were allowed to possess were sidearms, nothing that could be used by one ship against another.
I've got what may be some interesting data on that, Felix said, rummaging in his briefcase. Our people in the UN reach into Hepburn Gilbert's office, as you may or may not know. We can't compel him to do anything, but we can at least discuss it.
He produced a document.
Our Secretary General is worried about the consistent appearance of Palmer Eldritch in every one of the so-called reincarnations that users of Choosy experience. He's smart enough to correctly interpret what that implies. So if it keeps happening, undoubtedly we can get more cooperation from him, at least on a sub rosa basis. For instance...
Leo broke in.
Felix, let me ask you something. How long have you had an artificial arm?
Glancing down, Felix grunted in surprise, and then, staring at Leo Bolero, he said,
So do you too. And there's something the matter with your teeth. Open your mouth and let's see.
Without answering, Leo got to his feet and went into the men's room of the ship to survey himself in the floor-length mirror. There was no doubt of it, even the eyes, too. Resignedly, he returned to his seat beside Felix Blau. Neither of them said anything for a while. Felix rattled his documents mechanically. Oh, God, Leo thought, literally mechanically. And Leo alternated between watching him and dully staring out the window at the blackness and stars of interplan space. Finally, Felix said,
Sort of throws you at first, doesn't it?
It does, Leo agreed hoarsely. I mean, hey, Felix, what do we do?
We accept it, Felix said.
He was gazing with fixed intensity down the aisle at the people in the other seats. Leo looked and saw, too, the same deformity of the jaw,
the same brilliant, unfleshly right hand, one holding a homeopape, another a book, a third its fingers restlessly tapping. On and on and on, until the termination of the aisle and the beginning of the pilot's cabin. In there, too, he realized. It's all of us.
But I just don't quite get what it means, Leo complained helplessly. Are we in, you know, translated by that foul drug, and this is...
He gestured.
We're both out of our minds, is that it?
Felix Blau said,
Have you taken Chuzi?
No, not since that one intravenous injection on Luna.
Neither have I, Felix said. Ever. So it's spread, without the use of the drug. He's everywhere, or rather, it's everywhere. But this is good. This'll decidedly cause Hepburn Gilbert to reconsider the UN's stand. He'll have to face exactly what this thing amounts to. I think Palmer Eldritch made a mistake. He went too far.
Maybe it couldn't help it, Leo said.
Maybe the damn organism was like a protoplasm. It had to ingest and grow. Instinctively, it spread out farther and farther, until it's destroyed at the source, Leo thought. And we're the ones to do it, because I'm personally Homo sapiens evolvens. I'm the human of the future right here, sitting in this seat now, if we can get the UN's help. I'm the protector, he said to himself, of our race. He wondered if this blight had reached Terra yet, a civilization of Palmer Eldritch's, gray and hollow and stooped and immensely tall, each with his artificial arm and eccentric teeth and mechanical slitted eyes. It would not be pleasant. He, the protector, shrank from the envisioning of it. And suppose it reaches our minds, he asked himself. Not just the anatomy of the thing, but the mentality as well. What would happen to our plans to kill the thing? Say, I bet this still isn't real, Leo said to himself. I know I'm right and Felix isn't. I'm still under the influence of that one dose. I never came back out. That's what's the matter. Thinking this, he felt relief, because there was still a real Terra untouched. It was only himself that was affected. No matter how genuine Felix beside him and the ship and the memory of his visit to Mars to see about Barney Mayerson seemed.
Hey, Felix, he said, nudging him. You're a figment. Get it? This is a private world of mine. I can't prove it, naturally, but...
Sorry, Felix said laconically. You're wrong.
Aw, come on. Eventually I'm going to wake up, or whatever it is you finally do when that miserable stuff is out of your system. I'm going to keep drinking a lot of liquids, you know, flush it out of my veins. He waved. Stewardess,
he beckoned to her urgently.
Bring us our drinks now. Bourbon and water for me.
He glanced inquiringly at Felix.
The same, Felix murmured. Except I want a little ice, but not too much because that way when it melts the drink is no good.
The stewardess presently approached, tray extended.
Yours is with ice?
She asked Felix. She was blonde and pretty, with green eyes the texture of good polished stones, and when she bent forward her articulated spherical breasts were partially exposed. Leo noticed that, liked that. However, the distortion of her jaw ruined the total impression, and he felt disappointed, cheated. And now, he saw, the lovely, long-lashed eyes had vanished, been replaced. He looked away, disgruntled and depressed, until she had gone. It was going to be especially hard, he realized, regarding women. He did not, for instance, anticipate with any pleasure the first sight of Ronnie Fugatti.
You saw? Felix said as he drank his drink. Yes, and it proves how quickly we've got to act, Leo said. As soon as we land in New York, we look up that wily, no-good nitwit Hepburn Gilbert.
What for?
Felix Blau asked. Leo stared at him, then pointed at Felix's artificial, shiny fingers holding his glass.
I rather like them now, Felix said meditatively.
That's what I thought, Leo thought. That's exactly what I was expecting. But I still have faith I can get at the thing. If not this week, then next. If not this month, then sometime. I know it. I know myself now and what I can do. It's all up to me. Which is just fine. I saw enough in the future not to ever give up, even if I'm the only one who doesn't succumb, who's still keeping the old way alive, the pre-Palmer Eldritch way. It's nothing more than faith and powers implanted in me from the start, which I can, in the end, draw on and beat him with. So in a sense, it isn't me. It's something in me, that even that thing Palmer Eldritch can't reach and consume, because since it's not me, it's not mine to lose.
I feel it growing. Withstanding the external, non-essential alterations, the arm, the eyes, the teeth, it's not touched by any of these three. The evil, negative trinity of alienation, blurred reality, and despair that Eldritch brought back with him from Proxima, or rather from the space in between. He thought, we have lived thousands of years under one old-time plague already that's partly spoiled and destroyed our holiness, and that from a source higher than Eldritch. And if you can't completely obliterate our spirit, how can this? Is it maybe going to finish the job? If it thinks so, if Palmer Eldritch believes that's what he's arrived here for, he's wrong. Because that power in me that was implanted without my knowledge, it wasn't even reached by the original ancient blight. How about that? My evolved mind tells me all these things, he thought. Those E-therapy sessions weren't in vain. I may not have lived as long as Eldritch in one sense, but in another sense I have. I've lived 100,000 years, that of my accelerated evolution, and out of it I've become very wise. I got my money's worth. Nothing could be clearer to me now. And down in the resorts of Antarctica I'll join the others like myself. We'll be a guild of protectors, saving the rest. Hey, Blau, he said, poking with his non-artificial elbow the semi-thing beside him. I'm your descendant. Eldritch showed up from another space, but I came from another time. Got it? Felix Blau murmured. Look at my double dome, my big forehead. I'm a bubblehead, right? And this rind, it's not just on top, it's all over. So in my case, the therapy really took. So don't give up yet. Believe in me.
Okay, Leo.
Stick around for a while. There'll be action. I may be looking out at you through a couple of Jensen Luxvid artificial type eyes, but it's still me inside here. Okay?
Okay, Felix Blau said. Anything you say, Leo.
Leo? How come you keep calling me Leo? Sitting rigidly upright in his chair, supporting himself with both hands, Felix Blau regarded him imploringly. Think, Leo. For Christ's sake, think. Oh, yeah. Sobered, he nodded. He felt chastened. Sorry, it was just a temporary slip. I know what you're referring to. I know what you're afraid of. But it didn't mean anything. He added, I'll keep thinking, like you say. I won't forget again. He nodded solemnly, promising. The ship rushed on, nearer and nearer Earth. About the author. Philip K. Dick was born in Chicago in 1928 and lived most of his life in California. He briefly attended the University of California, but dropped out before completing any classes. In 1952, he began writing professionally and proceeded to write 36 novels and 5 short story collections. He won the Hugo Award for Best Novel in 1962 for The Man in the High Castle and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award for Best Novel of the Year in 1974 for Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said. Philip K. Dick died of heart failure following a stroke on March 2, 1982, in Santa Ana, California. This concludes the reading of The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch by Philip K. Dick. Copyright 1964 by Philip K. Dick. This book was read by Tom Weiner. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with the Philip K. Dick Trust in care of Scoville Chichak Galen Literary Agency, Incorporated, and was produced in 2008 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a complete catalog of our titles, or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD and MP3 CD, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.